All right, we're joined now by the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. Brian, fresh off the call of finally a Big 12 road win for the Jayhawks going to Oklahoma. Didn't look promising in that first half. Brian, down by as many as 11, I believe, but came back, cut it to 5 at halftime, and then go on to win it on the road. Does it kind of feel like the monkey's off the back of KU a little bit, finally getting that road win?
It does a little bit, and then you kind of wish you had a few more to continue to prove it. But you have arguably the two toughest ones remaining in Baylor and Houston. You could say Iowa State tougher, but I think Baylor's right in that category. And we'll find out, I guess, tomorrow when they host Houston, just what their new venue is like for an elite-level top 10 matchup. But we're going to find out real quickly for Kansas if they can stay in this league race. So far, the dominoes have fallen like we needed them to. In terms of Houston beating Iowa State, Iowa State's remaining schedule, had they won the Houston game, it'd be hard to imagine two more losses. We saw Baylor lose, to BYU. Now it's just a matter of taking care of your own business. You need one more piece of help, and that would be potentially a Baylor upset of Houston this Saturday. And then if Kansas, can continue, as you said, to get the monkey off the back and win away from home, it would set up, potential Big 12 championship clinching game in the season finale versus Houston in Houston. Now, that's extrapolating a little bit too much probably, because there's four games that have to go your way between now and then, but two of them are at home, and they're your next two. And before we talk again, those two will be in the rearview mirror. So I just circle that Baylor-Houston game tomorrow with that as a backdrop, because if Kansas does handle its business and Baylor would upset Houston, then, when we talk next week to preview Kansas heading to Waco, that's going to be the key stepping stone to being right back in the thick of this. And so things have kind of started to align a little bit, but the Jayhawks, their biggest hurdles are still ones they have to clear themselves.
Yeah, no question about that. And, getting Kevin McCullough back obviously helps, and they get the road win at Oklahoma. Did the break come at a really opportune time for Kansas? I mean the break as in they didn't have to play a midweek game. Their last game was Saturday, so they basically have a week in between games.
You could say that, Wade, but we probably could have used it 2 weeks ago. When you're this tired and you've got two or three guys with nicks and bumps, and in Kevin's case, something he's probably going to deal with for the rest of the season, the break could have come sooner and Bill would have been okay with it. I asked him straight up on Monday, would you have preferred this, right in the middle of your 18-game schedule, 9 games in to league play? And he said, it's hard to sit up here and make that comment because it sounds like we're complaining or whatever. But, we get it, and there's 5 games left. So this would kind of be the equivalent to if in an NFL season of 17 games, if you didn't get your NFL bye week until November 27th. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so did it come at an opportune time? Yes. But could it have been more opportune? Probably. If Kevin could have sat one of those games we lost without him, without us having to play, if he could have had those days of rest because we were off in the middle of that week, and then he winds up playing it as a result, then it's a really opportune placement of your bye. But the sad thing is, we could sit here and hem and haw about, trying to get guys extra rest and all that stuff. In Kevin's case, the injury is such, after tweaking it in Norman on Saturday, it's probably going to be there the rest of the way. And at this point, you're not going to shut him down. The only shutdown you could see, if it continued to be an issue, they might sit him out Kansas City. And that's me talking, not Bill at all. Because at this point, he needs to play games. And you gave him more than 2 weeks off, but if you can tweak it again that quickly, that easily, it's probably going to be something that just requires an end-of-season shutdown that they just don't have that time at this point. And it's not so detrimental that he can't play on it. So it's one of those deals, Wade, where I think we're just going to have to roll with it unless it gets worse before it gets better, and then they'll have to reevaluate their options.
Yep. Now you get Texas coming in town, and Texas is a talented team, and DeSue is having a big year, 55% from three, averaging 17 points a game. We played a cut from Bill Self talking about, he can't even think of the last big guy that's been able to do something like that. Talk about the challenges KU has, even though they're at home, and most people just assume, well, Kansas is home, they're going to win. There's nothing that will wreck their chances of still winning a Big 12 title more than losing at home. And that their next home game, of course, is coming up tomorrow. Pregame at 4:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. What problems does Texas present to the Jayhawks?
Well, you mentioned DeSue, and we had a conversation entering the tournament last year where I told you if I could pick any player off another team's roster and add him to that Kansas team, it would have been DeSue. And that was before we had Hunter Dickinson. But even with him, Dylan's such a more athletic and agile. And, you know, they both have the prowess of hitting beyond the arc. Hunter's has really gone cold in league play. But Dylan, as a stretch big man, it can also collect 18 feet from the bucket and in two dribbles be dunking it on you because he's got that type of fluidity to his game. It's a weapon, man. I mean, I have as much respect for his game as just about anybody in the league. And I realize if we posed that question today, some people would say, we want Shed from Houston, or, you know, we want the Baylor big man, Misi, who looks like he's going to be a top 15 overall pick now, just based on his length and the springs in his shoes. But, man, to me, DeSue is just such a talent. Obviously, he overcame injury at the start of the year, so it took him a little longer to get rolling. But he's great. Tyrese Hunter, it's funny. We had this conversation 2 years ago when Tyrese was actually transferring, and he was on campus. I got to shake his hand and meet him during his recruiting visit. He was leaving Iowa State. He was choosing between Kansas and Texas, and obviously he picked Texas. But that was another player that you're like, man, if I could pluck one guy off another roster. And he hasn't quite ascended like I thought after his freshman year at ISU. If you go back to 2022 and watch some of those tournament games, he looked like a superstar in the making. But, man, you put Aizmuth on top of that, and you've got just a full cavalry of firepower for this team to come at you with. And they've got, you know, Mitchell, who was a McDonald's All-American guy, top 15 guy coming out of high school, big-time athlete as well. So it's amazing to think there's this much talent and they've struggled to stay in the league race, which shows you that on any given night, if they put it together, they could absolutely beat anybody, and we've seen that. So a lot of respect for Texas, a lot of excitement for this matchup tomorrow, and, you know, hopefully Kansas holds serve. We shouldn't just sit here and assume wins the next two just because Kansas is 6-0 in the league at home right now. And beat UConn at home and is perfect at home overall in the season, 13-0, we shouldn't just assume. But if Kansas can take care of its business, boy, you're suddenly right back in this league race conversation. And that's where I kind of try to start the conversation today, because everything they set out to accomplish is still within reach. They need a little bit of help, but some of the help's already come. And now that they did prove, you know, they could win one at Oklahoma last week, you hope that, you know, pays dividends and brings confidence to the group once they complete their homestand here and head back out on the road.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week on the Sports Ticket by Interstate Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. All right, I want to change gears for a moment here, Brian. I want to ask you this. 95.5% of national champions since 2001 have had a top 21 KenPom offense prior to going into the NCAA tournament. So that's about a 22-23-year snapshot. 91% of national champions since 2001 have had a top 31 KenPom defense prior to going into the NCAA tournament. As of now, the 8 teams in America that satisfy one or both of those requirements are Houston, who Kansas beat, UConn, who Kansas beat, Tennessee, who Kansas beat, Purdue, Arizona, Duke, North Carolina, and the one that surprised me, Creighton. Kansas is not on this list. What do you take out of that?
Well, I'd have to have you pull up where we ranked defensively, because offensively we were still scoring in the upper 70s, you know, as of last week, and I'd be interested to see just where we fall in the pecking order there. There's no secret that this offense, when Kevin sat out 3 of 5 games, labored at times. And there's no secret that Hunter Dickinson went through a slump. And, you know, you couldn't count on the 20-16 that you got in Norman, Oklahoma. But if Bill Self can get this team calibrated and playing to its optimal potential, those are two guys that average 38 points a game between the two of them, and not many can boast that. Nobody else can boast two midseason top 10 All-American picks. Mm-hmm. And so where our numbers have dipped, it may affect those Ken Pom rankings, and hopefully I've given you enough time to look up where he's got it from the other ones as of today. Where they dipped, I think you can point to a pretty obvious stretch of barren statistics there. And some of that's on Hunter, who hasn't at times been as dominant of a force as he was built to be. But some of that was also when Kevin was out and teams were focusing more on Hunter, and we've not had consistent three-point shooting to stretch the floor and give Hunter more spacing. And so there's definite warts and weaknesses to this offense, don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is, in my estimation, it should absolutely be a top 20 offense when they're running at their optimal level in terms of health and who's on the floor. You wish you had a little more firepower off the bench. And bench scoring is a absolute eyesore for Kansas, no doubt. There is no Remy Martin walking through that door like you had 2 years ago, who really changed the trajectory of this team's, you know, tournament path and title hopes and all that. And that's as big a concern as any for me right now outside of Kevin's knee. But I do think, as many have said, far more credible than me. You know, this is a starting five as good as any in America. The ESPN Game Day crew said it's the best in America. And, you know, when they're healthy, that statement is true. And so I think those offensive and defensive numbers would grade out. We just got to find a way to have availability, have fresh legs, as we've talked about on many of these reports. But, you know, right now I can see where maybe they fell briefly out of that threshold that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, you know, if we have health on our side down the stretch, or at least close to optimal health, Kevin able to be close to the full version of himself, then we certainly fit the bill on this category.
I did pull up these numbers, and the adjusted defensive efficiency, according to KenPom, points allowed per 100 possessions adjusted for opponent, Kansas is now in the top eight at eight. So there you go. They would qualify. And that's what I said when I read this whole thing was, okay, these are the eight schools that fit the criteria right now, but there's a school that's not on this list that's beaten three of the eight, and that's Kansas. So to me, they've got to be considered a national championship contender. And I know people may be a little sour because of the injuries and what they've gone through recently. Adjusted offensive efficiency, Kansas is at 46. So overall, yeah, according to KenPom, Kansas is 17th. But we were talking the other day, Brian, about, you know, you look at the top 25, and you can go by your gut, you can go by the eye test, whatever the case may be. And there were people that were saying recently, people that I knew, there were people that were writing stories about how UConn is, well, UConn and Purdue are at a top tier. They're better than everybody else. And then Purdue went out and lost. And then it was, well, UConn, they beat Marquette by 28 at home. So, that, I mean, are you going to take the field or UConn? And I'm sitting there going, UConn's not, this isn't even the best UConn team they've ever had, let alone one of the best teams ever. And they had lost two games, and they got steamrolled by Creighton after they won by 28 against Marquette. And so then it got us to talking on the show, Brian, about, well, who are really the national championship contenders? Like, I think if you look at the top 25 and other teams getting votes, you could sit here and say, you know what, I think there's 20, 25 teams that can make a run to the Final Four. But in regards to winning six games and winning a national championship and cutting down the nets in April, to me, I went through the whole thing and I came up with 12 with two that were questionable for me. Dusty came up with 10, and then the KenPom stuff came out, and there was those eight, and then I would add Kansas to that mix, so now you're at nine, and maybe I would take Creighton out of it. Iowa State's not listed here either, and I don't think Iowa State's a team that's going to win six in a row, but I think Kansas is capable if they get the right matchups and the way they're built. So what do you think? Is there? Do you think there's 8, 9, 10, 12? Are we underestimating it that there's so much parity that there's 15 or 20 teams that can win six in a row and win it all?
I think there's 15 teams-ish.
Okay.
Because I think the teams at the top, to your point, and oh yeah, by the way, Arizona just lost last night. You
That's
can add
right.
that to your list.
Yeah.
I think they're all vulnerable,
yes.
You know? And so it's not that there's 15 world beaters out there. It's there's 15 teams that, you know, with the way your path opens up and things that dominoes fall before you and that kind of thing, could navigate their way to the big stage. I mean, Look at Florida Atlantic last year, and look at San Diego State last year.
Yep.
Nobody was sitting on a sports talk show on February 23rd talking about those teams.
Yep.
But things kind of open up. It's the nature of the beast. And so I don't think that there's any, you know, what was the year with Kentucky? Was it 2014 where they almost went undefeated? Obviously 2012 they won it all.
Mm-hmm. I think
Anthony
it was 14.
Davis. But there's no team like that.
No.
That you're just like, oh, my gosh. You know, Purdue we thought maybe was the closest thing to it. And UConn, as you said, for the last couple of weeks has looked like that as they kind of started the peak. But I thought they had more firepower last year, quite frankly.
Agreed.
So I think that there's probably in the neighborhood of 15-ish teams that could navigate the right path and win it. And Kansas is most certainly one of those teams. What scares me is because of the lack of bench firepower, like I talked about, if Kevin goes cold, and let me tell you, he was cold on Saturday in Norman.
Right.
Who else is going to step up and deliver? That was a shorthanded Oklahoma team we beat. We wore them down. They shot only 18% in the second half, 4 of 22. Kansas ran away with it. But if there's a lid over the bucket in, you know, some football stadium we're shooting at in mid-March, you know, and everything's clanking and bricking and all that, is there somebody that's going to come in and provide a spark? I don't see that guy on our bench currently. So it might have to be Johnny Furphy from the starting lineup that steps up and takes over a game. Can he do that? These are some of the questions that remain to have answers. But one thing that you have this year that you haven't had consistently since Doak, and that includes the David McCormick era, because you'll recall that, you know, David didn't come on until really the last five of the last seven games or so in terms of, like, feed the big fella, let him eat. But if they can reestablish Hunter and keep his confidence and consistency up, we have the chance to play for high percentage buckets more so than we've had since Azubuike, because the combination of Hunter and KJ and what they can combine to shoot in the interior is such that, you know, from an offensive efficiency standpoint, especially in tournament settings where everybody gets a little bit tenser and tighter and all of a sudden it's tougher to hit shots and all that, you know, those are two guys that we can hop on the backs of. But you got to have some shred or scrap of three-point threat to space the floor and stretch guys out and all that. And that's where Kevin's got to find a way, and Johnny's got to stay hot and all that, because we just don't have additional weaponry coming off the bench that you can count on unless Nick Timberlake, you know, has a massive transformation here in the next 5 weeks.
I mentioned this late in the Chiefs season, and I think I was kind of the minority. There were a lot of people were worrying about the Chiefs. Oh, there's no way this team's going to be able to make the big run. They might get the AFC title game. They're going to lose in Baltimore. And I kept talking about how, you know, it's an experienced team that maybe they're just ready to try to turn it on in the playoffs. They know they can win on the road, even though technically they hadn't won on the road in the playoffs, but you knew that you could. And so I was more optimistic about the Chiefs even after they lost to the Raiders, saying, listen, the pieces are still here, and Andy Reid and the Chiefs usually figure something out. And they did. I looked brilliant by saying that. I could have looked like a moron. They could have lost to the Dolphins. I am seeing some parallels as KU men's basketball team, and I'm not sitting here telling everybody that they're going to be cutting down the nets in April, but I look at Kansas. Do I think they're going to win the Big 12 with where they're sitting right now? That's highly unlikely. But that's not how you get judged at the end of the season. How many times has KU had unbelievable seasons and it's a horrible disappointment? They lost to Northern Iowa in the second round. They lost to VCU in the Elite Eight. But they won the Big 12, but nobody seems to care so much because it's the way the season ended. And, you know, I don't even need to know whether KU won the Big 12 a couple years ago. They won the national championship. That, of course, is what's most important. My point is, I think Kansas is a dangerous team, as long as they're healthy. With their starting five, can go up against anybody in America. There are longer media timeouts. Bill's just got to sprinkle in a guy here and there to buy a little bit of time. Granted, if you have an injury or foul trouble, that could be the kiss of death for this team. So there's not much room for error, as you've stated many times on the show. But this is a team, to me, that they have experience. Some of these guys have been there, obviously been on a national championship team a couple years ago. This is a Kansas team, and they have maybe the best coach, if not the best coach in America. And the Chiefs, of course, have one of the best, if not the best coach in the NFL. I see some similarities and parallels between the Chiefs and KU And I've heard the same type of things being said about KU that I heard about the Chiefs. They're not as good this year. They're going to have to rebuild the roster next year. They've got to make adjustments. And I think you got to learn from history that when you start writing off teams that have championship DNA, whether it's their coaches or even some of the players, I think you're setting yourself up to either be surprised or setting yourself up to be kind of a fool for writing these people off.
No, I think everything you said, is something I can sign up for and believe in and get behind. I think the big uncommon denominator is, as much as we feel like this team at its best with Kevin and Hunter, when they're playing at their best, give us a chance to be on that national title level, you don't see Patrick Mahomes-like consistency from either of those two guys.
True.
Just to use your metaphor.
Yeah.
Because you brought it up, Chiefs Jayhawks here. But if our 15 starts to regain form and has a postseason like their 15 did,
yeah.
I'm talking Kevin McCullough, Mahomes, then it's spot on. I think the difference is I'm still trying to figure out, is Kevin him, so to speak?
Yeah.
He's always been the secondary option, right? But to Jalen Wilson or at Texas Tech early in his career, he was a great defender that scored about 10 a game but wasn't the alpha. Well, for November and December, he looked the part. And he looked like a National Player of the Year candidate, let alone All-American. And obviously, the knee has made it tougher on him, but the shooting numbers have really gone in the tank. This would be a prolonged slump, to use your metaphor with Mahomes and the Chiefs, be a prolonged multi-game, low completion percentage, throwing some picks type slump. And again, a lot of this is physically induced for Kevin, but he's got to get his mind right as well. And if he can prove to be that true alpha that Ochai was, that Jalen Wilson was last season before Self's, postseason health issues kind of derailed things. If he can be that, then I think we can flip the switch and do everything you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to know that the optimal version of those two, what they were in November and December that put them on those mid-season All-American lists, can be replicated in February and March. Because if it shows up in those 2 months, hey, man, I'm putting Kansas in Phoenix, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out on our brackets here, because we do have the best coach, in my opinion, decisively in the college game today. And we do have veteran experience. You got a point guard that's played for the biggest stakes,
yep,
on the biggest stage and all that. So to me, pieces are there, but we got to get those guys clicking, because the metaphor that you used, they flipped the switch in the postseason. And Sac Nation, Chris Jones, and Sneed, and Mahomes, and Kelce were different guys than what we saw, in that Christmas Day game versus the Raiders. And so that's the switch that needs to be flipped for Kansas. And maybe we'll see that in Waco and in Houston, and hopefully this Saturday versus Texas. But for that analogy to hold true, our 15 has got to show some glimpses of their 15. And I'm not trying to put it all on Kevin McCullough, but there are some similarities there in terms of Lubbock, Texas, Texas Tech, number 15,
yeah,
black and gold, all that. So we'll see. But I think that Kevin's tremendous. He's one of my favorite players. I want to see him assume that lead dog role and thrive in it like he was early in the year. If so, I think your metaphor is a good one.
Yeah, and I think you make some great points. And there's one more similarity. The Chiefs had a really good defense throughout the year when healthy, and then in the playoffs they're outstanding. And this Kansas team has the capability of being really good defensively. You already mentioned it with Harris and McCullough, two of the best defenders in America. That maybe they can tighten the screws defensively and really tough, and might have to win games like they did. What was it back in 2012 with Thomas Robinson, Jeff Withey, Tyshawn Taylor? KU didn't win pretty, but they found ways to win in the tournament. It wasn't pretty,
yeah,
but they locked down and made stops when they had to.
And I think the difference with those defensive teams is Jeff Withey had a historically great NCAA tournament in,
yes,
blocking shots,
yes,
as in he set the record for the tournament. And Hunter is not that.
No.
But can Hunter do more in contesting shots? Yes. And everything we just said about Kevin needing to flip the switch, same is true with Hunter. So, if you can get not just the consistent, efficient offensive version of Hunter, but a little more imposing on the defensive end, then yeah, I think that does add up to a team that could certainly play all the way to a Monday night in April.
All right, man. Time for our off-the-wall question. Yesterday was National Margarita Day. The off-the-wall question, what is your favorite cocktail or fruity drink?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I used to be a guy that would lean toward a lot of the sweeter drinks. And then I was told that was emasculating and I should drink like a man. my engineer, Steve Kincaid, he got me drinking Old Fashions, which still has a little hint of sweetness in there. You know, you got the cherry and the orange slice and all that, but I mean, you got strong whiskey too.
Yeah.
And so I've become an Old Fashioned guy in more ways than one in the last couple of years of my life. But that would probably be the one. Now, if we're on a beach somewhere and I can do a throwback to a nice pina colada,
yes,
with some Malibu rum in it,
yes,
I mean, that tastes like dessert to me. So I love that. But yeah, if we're just out grabbing a cocktail, I'm probably going for Old Fashioned and some kind of Buffalo Trace, Whiskey Pig, whatever type whiskey in it.
Whenever we go on any kind of trips, when we go out of the country, the all-inclusive resorts, you can try everything, of course. And most of the time, my wife and I are getting some of the fruitiest, sweetest drinks imaginable. And then I think, and I say to myself when I get back, how much sugar did I inhale and consume with all of these fruity, sugary, sweet drinks? But you know what? That's why it's called vacation. You can let yourself splurge, right?
That's so true. That's a good point. You pay for it later, but hey, got to win in Rome. You got to soak it up.
I like that. Yeah. Hey, man, have a great call tomorrow. KU in Texas, pregame at 4:30 on Z96.3 Lake, and then another big game at home against BYU. We'll talk about both of those and preview the matchup with Baylor next week with you.
Sounds good, bud. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Take care. Have a great weekend. That's Brad Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week. Normally on Thursday, this week on a Friday to fit Brian's schedule. He's worked with us. We like to work with him. And Brian's appearance is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.